This is Sustainable East End, a show about land use, energy and water resources, transportation, and the farming and food industries on the eastern end of Long Island. I'm Francesca Rhiannon, co-producer with Tony Ernst. Wind power has been part of the East End of Long Island since 1644, with the picturesque wooden smock mills that ground grain, pumped water, and sawed lumber. Even in the centuries since, small windmills have helped farmers produce power, although most fell into disuse with the spread of the electric grid. But in 2022, if all goes according to plan, the East End will get much of its electricity from the 21st century version of windmills. 15 sleek offshore turbines will be set spinning just over the horizon from Montauk. Sustainable East End went to a public forum about Deepwater Wind's planned South Fork Wind Farm held at the Southampton Library on April 17th. The League of Women Voters hosted the event, and I spoke first with the League's Southampton Chapter co-president, Glorian Burke of Watermill. Glorian, can you say, can you tell our listeners why you are putting on this event about deep water wind and what you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, one of the things that the League is famous for and that we work hard on is education. And so the purpose of this meeting this evening is to let the community understand the challenges we have with not enough electricity coming east of the canal at peak summer seasons. The rest of Long Island is actually having less electricity needs, but out here we have huge peak demands that are almost twice what we normally have on an average winter day. So we want the community to understand that. So we had originally someone from the governor's office, but she had to cancel at the last minute to talk about the governor's vision of having more sustainable electricity. We have someone from PSEG here to talk about how PSEG is trying to implement the governor's plan. And then we have Clint Plummer from Deepwater Wind to explain about what this wind turbines will be able to do for us in terms of meeting some of our high peak needs.
Glorian Burke is Southampton's League of Women Voters co-president. She's also co-chair of Southampton's Sustainability Committee. Before the program got underway, I asked two local audience members why they'd come to the event. So I just wonder if you can tell me your first name.
It's Liz.
And Liz, why are you here at this event?
I wanted to get a greater understanding of what the program will be for wind as an alternative energy sustainable source. Coal is not a sustainable direction to take, so I am supportive of alternative wind and solar energy. And I do have some concerns about what the impacts are. I happen to be a birder, and so I'd like to know what kind of studies have been conducted and what the impacts are to that aspect of wildlife, but I'm here to learn.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
My name is Gloria, and I'm really hoping that that's what we're going to see, that we're going to see the wind turbines, because we're on an island, we have plenty of wind. It costs nothing, and I think it's very good for the environment to do this.
Gloria and Liz, two East End residents who came out to Southampton's Roger Memorial Library for a forum on the planned wind farm to be built offshore Montauk Point by Deepwater Wind. Clint Plummer is Deepwater Wind's Vice President of Development. I spoke with him about the project and what it will take to get it up and running. You're going to be starting construction of Deepwater Wind around when?
So the project is scheduled to be online by 2022, but we've got many years of data collection and engagement with stakeholders and review by a host of different public sector permitting agencies. So for the next year, we're going to be gathering data and speaking with members of the community and all the regulatory agencies and the government authorities that will have oversight over this project. We expect there'll be over 20 different approvals required to move forward with this project. After we've spent that year gathering that data, we'll be submitting a set of permit applications at federal, state, and local levels, and that'll kick off about a 2-year public review process during which the agencies will be reviewing the information we've submitted, and the public will have opportunities to come to those authorities and to public engagement events and provide their input on the final details of the project that we've proposed then. Only after all of that, which we expect to be done sometime in 2020, will we then move into the phase of constructing the project.
I have to ask you, given the current federal administration, is there going to be any issue about getting permits that you might need from the federal government?
We don't think so. The federal government, even in this administration, has said that they want an all-of-the-above strategy to renewable energy and energy more broadly. The issue here is that we're the most cost-effective new source of energy for the east end of Long Island. We expect the project's going to require over 20 different federal, state, and local approvals. At the federal level, we don't need them to do anything special. There are existing processes that they go through every day. The agency that's primarily responsible for giving us our permits is the same agency that's responsible for offshore oil and gas leasing. And so that agency is very well funded. It's got a full staff, and they review these types of permit applications very frequently. The real driver of this, though, is the state-level policy, and Governor Cuomo has been a big supporter of clean energy and offshore wind in particular, and so we see this project as having a very clear pathway to receiving all of its permits. So this project's really being driven by the leadership of Governor Cuomo in moving New York to a 50% clean energy economy by 2030. So the state is setting the goal. This is one of a number of projects across the state that are being developed to help get to that goal of 50% clean energy by 2030.
That's a pretty ambitious goal. Let me ask you, in terms of the most cost-effective, could you break that down a little bit? Cost-effective as opposed to what?
Yeah, great question. So back in 2015, LIPA recognized that there was a need to build new sources of power generation to serve particularly the South Fork. They ran a competitive solicitation. We were not one of about a dozen different bidders that offered proposals that range from renewable energy like our project to conventional fossil-fired generation. LIPA reviewed all of those proposals, spent about a year doing analysis, and realized that our project, the South Fork Wind Farm, was the most cost-effective way to meet their reliability and sustainability goals for the South Fork.
Now, several years ago, I think it was back in 2008, LIPA said it was too expensive at $700 million. This is going to be $720 million, something like that. What's changed?
Technology has gotten a lot better, and in this case, we're responding to a specific need in a specific place. So something has to be done to meet the growing need for electricity on the South Fork. Our project is the most cost-effective way to meet that need.
Even more than, let's say, solar energy.
It is. If you look at our project, because we're so far offshore, we're able to capture the strong, steady winds that are available there and provide a reliable, clean source of power. If you're going to try to generate the same amount of electricity that our project will produce and deliver every year, you need something in the range of about 1,500 acres of solar panels. So we're efficient because we're able to put this far offshore and not use the very valuable land here on Long Island.
So you say far offshore. There's been a certain amount of controversy. I know you've gotten a fair amount of pushback from Fisher folks around here, and also environmentalists like Larry Penny, who is, you know, longtime environmentalist here, who are claiming that there are issues, you know, that this could be dangerous for fish populations. I wonder if you could answer some of the concerns. Let's actually first start with the environmental community. Answer some concerns about bird mortality and fish mortality in terms of the wind power.
So these projects go through a very exhaustive environmental review. For example, our company built the first offshore wind farm in the U.S. off the coast of Block Island. That project went through the same type of review that the South Fork Wind Farm will go through. And through that, the Army Corps of Engineers, along with a host of other permitting agencies, found that we would have no significant impact on any species affected by the project. We're very confident that offshore wind will have a beneficial impact across the region. As it relates particularly to birds, you know, we spend a lot of time doing very detailed scientific studies as to the bird migration, where birds fly. What we found with our Block Island project, what we're finding here is that these projects are so far offshore that they tend not to be in the areas where birds go, because birds navigate by eyesight. So even when birds fly offshore, they navigate by seeing the coast. And so by putting a project like this 30 miles offshore, we're out of the migration pathways. As it relates to fish mortality, we spend a lot of time doing studies of our impacts in water, and we've seen no studies that suggest there's any impact on fish mortality associated with the operations of these types of projects.
So the questions that some of the fishermen had about, you know, the sound, sonar disrupting the fish populations, just the activity of putting in the cable, for example, as disrupting spawning grounds, what do you say to those?
So there's temporary impacts that will happen during construction, as with any type of construction project. And we're now in the process of meeting with the fishing community, listening to them, along with a host of other project stakeholders. And based on all the feedback that we're collecting and based on the surveys that we're conducting, we're going to be designing the project in such a way to minimize those impacts. But we've got a long process that we have to go through, both in gathering the data so we can develop the final design, and then also about a two-year process of public review in which we have to demonstrate that we've sufficiently addressed each one of those concerns, and members of the community will have an opportunity to come out and have their voices heard as part of those public review processes.
And how are you going to solicit the input from the fishermen?
We actually are spending a lot of time in Montauk and at other ports in the region now. We are engaging a series of fisheries representatives that will work on behalf of the ports and the specific gear types in Montauk and in other ports on eastern Long Island, and are looking forward to working with them to help inform our project and to facilitate communication with the fishing fleets.
One of the concerns I know is that anchors drag along the bottom and they may get caught in the cables. How will you address that issue?
Cables are designed to be buried at a target depth of about 6 feet beneath the seafloor, which is deep enough to avoid that. In cases where they're not, we'll have specific protection to avoid the cables being snagged.
Okay. Then where is this going to come ashore? Where is the electricity coming ashore, or do you not know that yet?
We're evaluating a number of different potential landfall locations, and as with every other aspect of this project, those are going to be based on good science and on our consultations with all the stakeholders. And then we'll be putting out our preferred and alternative approaches as part of our permit applications, which the public will then have an opportunity to comment on.
Now, wind is intermittent. How are you going to deal with the issues of storage, supply, what happens? Well, the wind is pretty steady offshore. Is that right?
The benefit of offshore wind is that it's very strong and it's very stable, and it tends to peak in its output at exactly the same time that the grid needs most power. And so that's one of the reasons that LIPA and PSEG Long Island chose this project, together with demand management and on-site energy storage, as a means of meeting the needs of the South Fork.
On-site energy storage, what is that?
So PSEG Long Island and LIPA, in connection with our project, will be building out energy storage facilities at the East Hampton substation to support this project and the grid and to facilitate the delivery of clean energy.
And what will be there? Are you talking about batteries?
Yes, you'll have to talk to LIPA and PSEG. It's their project, not ours.
How will the purchase of electricity from the offshore wind project affect the cost of power to the electrical customers here? Do you know that?
In the near term, we're saving people money because this is the cheapest new source of supply for the South Fork. So we avoid the need to build costly new fossil fired generation. And over the long term, we stabilize the cost of electricity because our fuel is free. It doesn't float up and down with the price of oil on the wholesale markets.
Now, do you have any idea what the price per kilowatt hour? Is that the right metric?
I think LIPA has said that they expect the whole program to be implemented for a total cost of ratepayers of about $1.19 per customer per month.
$1.19 in addition to what they're already paying?
I believe so, yes.
And
that's the cheapest of the alternatives necessary to meet the reliability and sustainability goals here for the South Fork.
I understand. And you're saying that that won't go up over time.
It's a fixed price that's a locked-in rate for 20 years.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
We're very excited to be here. You know, the more people learn about offshore wind, the more they tend to support it. This is a great project. We're excited to be building the first offshore wind farm for New York State, and we're excited to bring it here to the east end of Long Island with its long tradition of using the wind to support the economy. So we see this as the first of many clean energy projects for the state.
Thanks so much, Clint Plummer of Deepwater Wind.
Thank you very much.
Clint Plummer, Vice President for Development for Deepwater Wind. You're listening to Sustainable East End on WPKN Radio, and wind power is today's topic. We're talking about Deepwater Wind's new offshore wind project, the South Fork Wind Farm. It's expected to go online in 2022, with 15 turbines supplying 90 megawatts of renewable energy to an estimated 50,000 homes. The day after the forum, I called up Mike Voltz, who had spoken at the event on behalf of PSEG, the utility company that operates Long Island's electric grid under contract from LIPA. Voltz is the Director of Energy Efficiency and Renewables for the utility. PSEG has contracted with Deepwater Wind to buy the power it generates when the South Fork Wind Farm is completed. Now, I remember when PSEG first took over the contract with LIPA to take over the management of the energy supply out here. Now, I might have this wrong, but it seemed to me that when the offshore wind project was first proposed, the PSEG was not so much on board with it at that time. If that's true, what's changed?
So the project that was proposed early on was actually a different project. It was in the same general area, but it was a much larger, it included more wind turbines, and it was a larger project, and it was going to interconnect at a different point on Long Island. So this project, which was in response to the South Fork RFP that I discussed last night, was accepted pretty much from the beginning. We evaluated it, we compared it with other alternatives, we reviewed all the bids that came in, and determined that this project, which interconnects on East Hampton, is going to be beneficial because of both the need on the South Fork, along with the statewide 50x30 clean energy standard.
So, as you mentioned, there was an RFP, a South Fork RFP that you put out. Tell us a little bit more about what you were looking for and what the results of that RFP have been, even beyond this particular project.
Yeah, so the South Fork is an area of Long Island that's growing more rapidly than others. The demand for electricity is growing more with new homes being built and additions and things. So because of the growth of the electricity demand on the South Fork, we issued an RFP which was designed to have additional sources of supply and or demand reduction. So in any combination of reducing the demand for electricity, such as with smart thermostats on air conditioners and other efficient appliances, along with increasing supply, which could include offshore wind and other technologies, and lastly, even battery storage, which takes energy that can be stored in the batteries at nighttime and then discharged on a hot summer afternoon when we need it. So the combination of all those things were allowed to bid, and we did receive many bids and narrowed them down to the final three awards, which were, as I described, one was for an offshore wind project with Deepwater Wind. Another was for a load reduction program where a company is going to go around and encourage customers to put in these smart thermostats to control air conditioners on hot summer afternoons, which reduces the peak demand. And then lastly, there was a company that also proposed two battery storage projects, one at our East Hampton substation and one out at the Montauk substation. So the combination of all three of those would successfully help to alleviate the critical need for electricity on the South Fork and in combination with some transmission system upgrades that we're going to need to do, in total are going to meet the needs of the residents and businesses on the South Fork until the year 2030.
You just mentioned that peak demand goes up much more, of course, in the summer here. We have a huge influx of population in the summer. And I was surprised to hear, is this true that electric demand on the East End is growing faster than any other place in the United States?
I can't speak for any place in the United States, and I would be actually surprised if it's anywhere in the United States, but definitely faster than anywhere else on Long Island. It's an area of significant, you know, population growth and, you know, larger homes and newer homes going in. So it is growing more rapidly than anywhere else on Long Island. We estimate that the next 10 years or so it would grow by 3-4% per year, and elsewhere on the island it's less than 1%.
And is this because of the increase in population, or is it because of the increase in the footprint of the built environment of the houses that are being built, you know, with 10, 12, 14 bedrooms?
Yeah, it's probably a combination of the two. Certainly, when someone knocks down a small 2,000, well, not necessarily small, but when someone knocks down a 2,000-square-foot house and puts up a 10,000-square-foot house with central air conditioning and a swimming pool, it certainly adds more electricity consumption than a smaller home would use.
Now, what is the interrelationship between deep water wind, let's say, once they build the wind turbines out offshore? What is going to be the continuing relationship between PSEG and deep water wind? Or do you guys just take over the wind turbines at that point because you're operating the electrical system, or how does it work?
So we don't operate the wind farm itself. The offshore wind farm is going to be owned and operated by Deepwater Wind. They will also own the undersea cable that transmits the power from the wind to our East Hampton substation. So we'll only take over responsibility at the point of interconnection at our East Hampton substation, and then distribute the energy to the residents elsewhere, you know, on the South Fork and all over Long Island. So we won't have any direct involvement with the operation of the wind farm, other than the scheduling, you know, of the energy at our substation.
Let me ask you, what is going to be the impact on electric rates here? Is this going to mean, because this is a $700 million plus operation, that our rates are going to go up? What's going to happen to them long term, and will they ever go down?
So they will not necessarily go up. The reason I got this question last night as well, we really can't know with certainty, because the cost of energy that's produced by alternative means is mostly natural gas on Long Island. So in other words, our power plants that we purchase energy from predominantly produce the energy using natural gas, not entirely, but predominantly. And over the next 20 years, if you recall, this contract with Deepwater Wind doesn't start until 2022, and it goes for 20 years after that, so from 2022 to 2042, let's say. During that time period, we don't know what the cost of natural gas produced energy is going to be. It could be more expensive than wind, it could be less expensive than wind. So we really don't know the impact on rates, because it's relative to what would otherwise be produced in the wholesale electricity market. So one of the advantages of deepwater wind is it's a known price for the next 20 years. We know exactly how much we're going to pay for every kilowatt hour that comes out of it, as opposed to natural gas, which could be lower, but it could be more expensive depending upon the commodity markets that change day to day.
Now, Clint Plummer of Deepwater Wind said at the event in Southampton, he said that electric rates on Block Island had decreased by 40% because the residents were able to sell power back to the grid. Why is that not going to be a situation that could happen here?
Yeah, so the reason why the rates decreased on Block Island was, if you recall, he mentioned Clint Plummer, the speaker last night, that Block Island was not connected to the mainland in New England or Long Island, so it was an island by itself, and therefore it relied on diesel generators for its electricity. And if I recall the number, I think he said that they were paying 40 or 50 cents per kilowatt hour, which is about three times more than residents on Long Island are paying. So the reason they were able to obtain a decrease in prices as a result of the Block Island wind farm was because they were paying such a dramatically higher energy price using diesel generators. And when they connected to the mainland, they were able to get energy from the mainland at a less expensive cost than being out there on their own. Long Island, on the other hand, is already connected to the mainland in many locations and uses natural gas generators as opposed to diesel.
So does this mean that the price of wind is not going to change in terms of, I mean, the wind itself, the energy itself is free?
That's right.
As new technologies come on, the costs are going to be driven down even more. Are you saying that PSEG is going to capture all of the, you know, the savings without giving rebates back to customers? Or could customers on Long Island long-term actually see some decreased rates because renewable energy is just cheaper?
That's possible. As I said earlier, we know what the price is that we have to pay for the Deepwater Wind contract over the next 20 years. What we don't know is what the alternative is going to be. It's tied to natural gas. So it's certainly possible that over the next 20 years, the energy coming from Deepwater Wind could be less expensive than the energy produced in natural gas-fired plants. On the other hand, it's possible it can go the other way. It just depends on... But there is an advantage of having a known... It's, you know, we use the term hedging. It's a known price as opposed to a uncertain price and a volatile price. So there is the advantage, at least, that it's a more flatter profile. It doesn't escalate and go up and down very much.
There's been a lot of controversy over gas, frack gas. I mean, the whole issue of methane is, you know, it's not necessarily a bridge to the renewable future, as some folks in the environmental community have pointed out. So is it possible that you could decide that gas is not going to be the alternative fuel to wind and that there may be other better solutions, more environmentally friendly and just as cheaper?
So over the long term, New York State has a 50 by 30 commitment, which means they want to have 50% of all energy produced and sold in New York State to be renewable, which could be offshore wind, it could be solar PV, it could be land-based wind projects, et cetera. The majority of the balance, there's some nuclear plants that's being produced, but the majority is still natural gas, and I really can't speculate what might, you know, what the future might bring. But diversity of fuel is very important. Having some nuclear, some natural gas, some renewable, you know, the diversity is important because if the price of any one technology is increasing or decreasing, you can take advantage of diversity. Just like you diversify a stock portfolio, you want to do the same thing with energy supply.
Well, Mike Voltz, I want to thank you so much for talking with us here on Sustainable East End. This has been a fascinating discussion, and I look forward to more wind power energy on the East End.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Francesca.
Mike Voltz. He's Director of Energy Efficiency and Renewables for PSEG. And we've come to the end of another episode of Sustainable East End. Today, we spoke with Mike Voltz of PSEG, Clint Plummer of Deepwater Wind, and Glorian Burke of the League for Women Voters of Southampton. Sustainable East End airs on the third Wednesday of every month, and past episodes are archived at sustainableeastend.blogspot.com. Look for updates there about today's topic. Sustainable East End is produced by Tony Ernst and me, Francesca Rhiannon. Thanks for listening, and tune in again next month on May 17th, right here on WPKN.